Blog Talk Radio.
Blueprints, but apparently it's titled Outside the Box, so my show, Tony, screw you. Anyway, no, it's all good. We're just waiting for Tony to get on the board here with our guest, Simon, and I do have Cindy on the board with me. How you doing, Cindy?
Hi, okay.
Ooh, nice
time, Mike.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got a quick glimpse of the new headgear that you got, and it looks very reminiscent of my pilot gear. So yeah, well done.
Yeah,
actually gaming headphones, and apparently I have to configure everything through the computer to, I don't know. I was on my way to figuring it out, and it just didn't seem to want to work right now. So I put the old ones back in, and they didn't want to work. I had to go back and set it for them. So I've got it going now.
So you got it going on.
Yeah.
Well, I guess before Tony gets here, I guess I spent another one of those like wild days. So I was doing a little bit of copy and pasting from my Digital Blacks Law version, and what I've been noticing is like when I copy and paste something, some shit changes. You know, it's like it's really bizarre. So I thought, okay, well, one of them when I copied and pasted Ravishment, you can try this for yourself. Those that have the copy. Ravishment from Black's Law to a Word document, and connotations comes up C011110tations. So I thought, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. So I decided to Google C011110, and what comes up was this Indiana law thing, and lo and behold, who's it involving? Well, some guy called Worley versus Waddell or Waddle.
And,
it's showing up everywhere, you know. It's like Waddles. For those that haven't tuned in to previous shows, what I'm referring to is the Time Traveler Pig episode of Gravity Falls. And when you know how to use the Black Law, i.e. something that resonates with you or is stated three times, go look it up and see what it shows you. And gosh darn if it didn't, I looked up Waddles. That's the name of the pig, by the way. I know it sounds bizarre, but I've been through some stranger stuff than this. And what does it fall under? Weighed hearing, which is something about contesting your his or her out-of-court identification. There's a difference? I guess so. Anyway, yeah, so I just thought, again, another case involving identification. What are the odds?
I think that's just really wild. And you got that from copying and pasting off of Black's Law. PBS.
Yeah, it's just
amazing.
Just these coincidences. And by the way, I'm pretty sure the moon is in Gemini tonight, and it is a full moon. So if I seem a little schizoid, that's why. You can always tell when
I'm
the moon.
I'm feeling it over here, Kate. It's been a schizoid day. So.
You have Gemini rising in your sign, don't you?
I'm Gemini rising.
That's why. You'll notice that you're you might be a little particularly squirmy when the moon is in Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just letting people know that, so if they happen to know when the moon is going to be in their sign, that's just a little heads up for that overall energy that can be a little overwhelming. So if you're ready for it, you know it's coming, you know exactly what it is, and you again, it's like when you see the train coming, you step off the track kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It really sucks if you don't hear.
It's a little more exciting than when the moon is full any other time. It's when it's in your sun sign or your rising sign, I'm finding now. Thank you for pointing that out. Because I know the when it falls in Aquarius, but I tend to forget about the rising sign with the moon.
Yeah, well, my rising sign is Leo. Leo is my ascendant, 7 degrees, and so there it's. I get a double dose, pretty almost back to back. You got Gemini, Cancer, then Leo. So it's And there we have Simon. I'm just waiting for Tony to come on board here, so I'm just gonna open up Simon's mic, and I know Tony is going to have a field day tonight. So here, let me just bring Simon into the fray. Oh, and while I'm waiting for Simon's mic to load up here. For those that have maybe just recently met myself or whatever in terms of radio, I do like to on occasion let people know that I am transgendered. I am male to female, and boobs are bigger than, or my voice is lower than boobs would indicate. So I like to kind of get that across to people because that can be a little confusing for some. But there you go. Simon, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we're just waiting for Tony to show up, you know, slacker that he is. No, it was just to make sure that we got you online, because This is actually his show tonight. Oh, there he is. Okay, so we got Tony online here. And I think that's all of us. Simon, I'd like to introduce you to Cindy, who is been working with us of late and trying to get her all groomed up for her own radio show. She does a lot of work with Santa Bonacci, myself, and a whole slew of others. The list is quite lengthy. But there's Cindy for you.
Obviously. Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too.
Looking forward to hearing some of your experiences. I have ran across your name a time or two, so this is going to be fun.
Okay, well, I made it into the Huffington Post, so that's something, isn't it?
It sure is. Quite
oh,
impressive.
You're in the big time there, Simon.
Yes.
Well, hey, Tony, it's all yours, my friend. This is your show. I know the label went out is outside the box, but the reins are yours, my friend, and I'll jump in where required, and we'll go from there.
All cool. I thought outside the box was quite apt for tonight's show, as per the title, sort of like suggests, because Simon is, well, how would you describe yourself, Simon, just for the listeners that don't obviously know anything about you at the moment, please?
I prefer to refer to myself as an experiencer rather than an abductee or a contactee. I'm actually an elected politician. I'm a local Labour councillor for the town I live in. I've been very much involved in politics for many years. And I work, I'm a self-employed driving instructor. And I've had these experiences for as long as I can remember.
Awesome. Thank you. I've looked at a lot of your experiences, so I've got the privilege of a bit of foresight there. But it's quite an incredible story, isn't it? It begins basically from birth and goes right the way through. And there's some incredible information. So I think it might be better if we can just give the listeners who are listening just a background overview on your experiences just briefly so that we can begin to quantify a bit more information for them. So if you would.
Well, I came from an interesting family. I think many of us who have these experiences don't come from what society might call a straightforward family. My grandfather worked for MI6. He was a high-ranking British diplomat. He was a British consul, and he was based in the British Embassy in India. And he was awarded the OBE, the MBE, the CBE, and was offered a knighthood to be Sir, but he fell out with the then Prime Minister and had a big argument. And he left the diplomatic corps, but MI6 still wanted him to travel around the world. So he then represented Britain at the United Nations. And he did that until, I think, about 1960 when he retired. My mother, his grandfather was her dad, my mother worked for MI5. And her job was to type. This is before computers were prevalent in the civil side. She typed out documents that related to crashed UFOs. From 1971 till her death in 1979, and she was told that she worked for MI5, but in reality she was working for the National Security Agency of America, and MI5 were just handling her because she happened to live in Britain. So I grew up in a family where espionage, secrets, and the rule of the normal system didn't work. And my experiences, I would say maybe 20% to a quarter of my memories I've always remembered from the moment they occurred as a small boy. And then when I reached my 50th birthday, a whole load more memories came back. And interestingly enough, some of the memories that I've always had as a child, I realized now that they were only partial memories. I thought they were the lot. So a particular memory, I would then get extra bits to it. And I realized over a period of 6 months that I was not an abductee and I was not a contactee. It was very strange relationship. But because these beings have never, ever hurt me, I've never felt a victim. And because I'm been in a very privileged position to be able to have conversations with them. And when I say conversations, I don't mean as I'm communicating with you now. You don't use your mouth when you're with them. But because I've been able to not necessarily put questions, but have some sort of dialogue, and I've been consulted before anything's been done to me or with me, I was always felt fairly empowered. The beings that I have always interacted with are from what they refer to as the fourth frequency. I think researchers might call it the fourth dimension. In America, they refer to them as mantis. I know in Britain, we call them mantid. That's the main being that will come and collect me or interact with me. However, I have an extensive experience with Draconis reptilians, also native reptilians, and also Hydra reptilians. I know there are other groups of them, but those are the three groups that I interact with. There are several small little greys, different types. I don't get on with them, tall greys. But the most interesting one for many researchers, it doesn't come up often, are the feline species. These are the species that had a hand in building the Great Pyramid. And I have a very interesting relationship there. So a wide range of beings, each one with its own agenda. I'm very privileged, but also I realize that it's very difficult for people who haven't experienced to accept what I'm saying. I think I'll stop talking and have a drink of water now.
Okay. No, that's wonderful. I mean, it was very difficult for me to comprehend there was such a thing as free energy when I started this journey, but when I started looking into it and looking into the realities, well, it became absolutely flipping obvious. And it's the same as looking out into the Milky Way. I mean, if you look at all those different stars out there and all the different systems, I mean, how ignorant are we to think that we're the only race? Well, I mean, we're not the only race. We need to get over it. The point is, we are a bit of, in my experiences, we're an experiment that's underway here, and it's about to come to fruition, basically. There are lots of other beings, lots of other races, lots of other craft, and lots of other things that we've been, I'm not sure whether to say shielded from or kept from or has been hidden from us. But, lots and lots of different things.
Hmm.
You've primarily, as you say, had your first interactions with a mantid or mantis variety.
Yes.
It's a fascinating story how you've had that first happened. I don't know if you want to recap on your first experience.
When of course I refer to the mantids, I'm referring to the group that I have experience with. I mean, just as in the human race, there are different types. There are different types of mantids. So when I refer to the mantids, I'm not blanketing, I can only speak on those beings that I have interacted with. So the agenda or the relationship that I describe might not be the same as someone else who has a mantid interaction in another country. But my first memory of as physically incarnated on this planet in this lifetime would be in my cot. I must be about 3 months old, and I know people say, well, how can a three-month-old baby remember? Well, it's your soul that's remembering. And I can remember just these legs looking through the bars of the cot and thinking they're not my mother's legs because they were thin and green, and just didn't look right. And then these two hands coming down into the cot to pick me up, and the fact was that it had four fingers and they were green. And I was lifted out of the cot, but because I was so little, I had no control over my head. So my head just rolled about everywhere. And because of that, my head went back. All I could remember is the ceiling. So I couldn't see the being that was standing to the right of me. And then I was lifted up and lifted up and then turned around to face it. And I can remember my head falling forward and my chin banging the front of my breastbone, again, because I'm too young to even have the control over my head, and looking straight into these huge black eyes, absolutely amazing, just black. These eyes took up nearly half of this being's head. And the message that was sent to me was, I won't hurt you. You're very special. I love you. I am your mother. And then it was like falling down a dark well. So I often say to people, to try to explain it, if you were to stand over a well backwards and take a step backwards and throw your arms out and fall and fall and fall, that's what it felt like. And then I have no more memory after that particular interaction. So that's my first one.
Incredible. And obviously you had various experiences with people throughout your growing up, with people coming in and helping you, really, what you would call as a medical team coming to visit you throughout your childhood.
I can remember doctors saying in this reality, if I had a pain, I remember having a pain once and a doctor being summoned. And the doctor saying, describe the pain. But because I had interacted with them so much, I could only describe pain in colour. I couldn't describe it in English language. So I would say it's a green pain or it's a red pain. And they had to understand what that meant. When I was growing up, I'd accepted this being as my mother. And my human mother, I didn't call her mother. Because why would I? She's not my mother. And then I got a bit older and I started telling people that I had two mothers, and that's not very socially acceptable. So I then had to learn that I couldn't say that. But my human mother told me that the very first English word that I ever said was daddy, and that for about, I don't know, 2 months, I just called my human mother daddy, because I'd already got a mother. So this can't be my mother, it must be my daddy. So it was a very, very confusing for the family, I think, a very confusing time for them. And it was very confusing for me because I just assumed every family was like that. And then you realise in human society that isn't the case, and you've just got to shut your mouth and play the game because you have to get along on this planet and you have to be accepted. So that was a learning curve for me. And again, people find it so hard to understand that I never actually ate a meal with my human mother. I know people are absolutely gobsmacked at this, but from the age of 5, when I could hold a knife and fork, my mother would prepare the food in the kitchen. She would bring the food into the sitting room. I would sit at the table and eat the food. She would go back into the kitchen, shut the door, eat her food in the kitchen. I was not allowed to take my plate to the kitchen. She had to come out of the kitchen and collect my finished plate. And for all the years that we lived together till she died when she was 50, we never once ate together. The only time we would eat together is if we were going out to a friend's house or her parents, and then we would sit around the table and we would eat. And people just can't get a grasp of that, but that's the way it was. Her job was not to, be a mother to me as such.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's some incredible information. And this, you say your mother died when she was 50.
Yeah, she became an alcoholic because she couldn't cope with the information that she was typing. She'd had a very, very, not strict upbringing, but you can imagine my grandfather was a British, just below a British ambassador. So it was a very true blue, straight down the middle family. And so she was reading stuff that was just off this world, and she couldn't understand why the government had lied and were lying to everyone. And she was very loyal. I always say this, she was very loyal to the country. She never discussed it with anybody, what she was doing. She knew it was incredibly top secret. And in the end, I say she just couldn't cope with it. She became an alcoholic. So she went to her handler and said, I can't stand this any longer. I can't sleep. I can't do this, And you promised me my old job back. So they did. They released her from her secret work. She got her old job back. But within 2 weeks of that, she was dead. And I've also made it quite clear, I know they killed her. They had to, from their perspective, because she knew so much, and she was a loose cannon. And I ran away from the situation. I was, just over 18 years of age, no father, no human father, no brothers and sisters. I was an only child. And I decided that I would go to London, and because I was in Brighton at the time, go to London and get a job, which I did. And the day before I was due to leave the flat and move, I got an envelope through the door with £2,000 in used notes in it, and a note, typewriter note, saying, "Don't look back, Dick Whittington." And that was their blood money. They'd killed her. They were giving me £2,000, and they were just giving me a start in life. And remember, when I was 17, they said to my mother, "Does your boy want to drive, learn to drive?" And she said, "Well, yeah, you know, do you want to drive?" "Oh, yeah, I want to learn to drive." And they said, "Well, we'll provide you the car. You've just got to pay for your driving lessons." And then they gave me a Mark II, a Mark II Jaguar, 3.4 British Racing Green, absolutely beautiful vehicle. You know, my experiences are not standard experiences. And I know even to this day they watch me, my emails. This interview will be monitored. There's absolutely no question of that. But I just live with it and I get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one thing, as Kate often refers to, you've got to get over the cowardly lion, as in The Wizard of Oz. You've got to be able to just dust yourself off and say, right, okay, well, you know, I know everything's been monitored. I know, you know, I mean, I didn't go on Facebook for the longest time, for ages and ages, while I was learning this. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you, you know, you can try and hide, but you're not going to go anywhere. So you might as well just come out and, you know, get on with it. If you want to be a change, you know, try and make a difference in the world and stop worrying about it. Death isn't death. That's another thing they've lied to us about. So we're here to do a job. Let's go do it. And I know you feel the same way about that, Simon.
Yes, because some of the experiences have been quite eye-opening. You know, I had an experience where it's very difficult for many people to grasp, where I died through just a child, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, playing around and falling off the side of a wall, 8-foot drop onto concrete. I remember that my best friend, Malcolm Calton, we were in primary school, and we were just at the side of the house, and it was a big, big old Victorian house where the servants, in the old days, the Victorian days, had to go around the back of the house and to hide the servants from the lord and lady of the house. It was a big gully that was dug so that when every time the tradesmen came to the back door, they would never be seen by the guys in the house. But it meant there was an 8-foot or 9-foot drop all in concrete, and I remember falling off that. And I have no memory of... I remember falling. I have no memory of hitting the ground. My best friend, Malcolm, said to me, "I thought you were dead." He said, "I was calling your name," and he ran into the house to get my human mother, but there was nobody in. And I just remember this big black crow, big, big black crow flying towards me, and I thought, "Don't land on my chest, because you're huge. It'll crush me." And this big, big black bird comes right down, and then its wings, it sort of scoops me up. It's really crazy. It scoops me up, and it takes me up. And the next thing I know, I'm on what I'd call an operating table. And the mantids are divided into three groups, three different specific professions. And one of the professions are the doctors. And there are two doctors working on me, and I say to them, "You know, what happened?" And with no emotion in the voice, just straight voice, "You died." And then followed it with, "But don't worry, we will return you." And the very next thing I can remember, I'm standing by my bed, and I think, "Oh, I don't feel very well at all." And I pull the bedclothes back, and I just get into bed, and then my best friend runs into the bedroom shouting for my mother, and he sees me, and it's like something out of Charlie Chaplin film or Laurel Hardy film. He just stops, freezes. He's running full pelt. He sees me, And it's like, how the hell did you get out from the back garden down there and get here? So I've always known it. I've known without any doubt that they have technology that is absolutely beyond anything that the man or woman in the street can comprehend or grasp. And I understand this and I accept it. And that's one of the reasons that I've coped with it, because so many people who have in-depth interactions sadly take their own life because they cannot live in two worlds at once. And I've been extremely fortunate that I've been able to cope with it.
Yeah, absolutely. We often find that it's our path that enables us to have the strength to do that as well, isn't it? What we learn on the way through sort of like bolsters us and gets us ready for what's coming.
Yes, yes. But that so many people who have interactions fall foul of what we were just chatting before we went on air, what I call the dark Illuminati. These humans take a great interest in abductees or contactees and tend to try and get their hooks into them and manipulate them for a whole host of reasons. Although I've had an interaction where human scientists were present, the human scientists were not in control. Particular interaction, and to this day I do not know what the job of the human scientists were, but there were four men and a woman in typical white lab coats. But that's the only time I can remember humans being present. But as I say, they were there advising. They weren't giving orders. So I know that the government observes very closely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for my own part, I understand that, you know, all of these different entities have interactions with their respective parts to play in the roles, if you like.
Yeah.
And there are entities that have been on this world for way longer than we've been here, underground, deep underground military bases, undersea bases, you know, all sorts of manner of creatures and all sorts of manner of technologies. And they've all got their part to play, some of it positive, some of it negative. But there is a balance. There always has to be a balance within yin and yang. And this is one of the things that we've found. You know, it's not all one-sided. There has to be that balance. And it's up to us. It's a bit like an assault course. We've got to find our way over the assault course and come out the other end in one piece.
Yes, indeed.
And I often term that one piece to be consciousness. In other words, what we've been taught and what we've been told is a million miles away from what reality is. And the journey of coming through to consciousness is involving people beginning to learn that things aren't the way that they thought they were, and then beginning to understand the way that they really are, and then coming to terms with that and realizing that, and then having to handle and deal with that information in order to become conscious of the situation. That's my analogy. I don't know what you think of it.
Well, I think I would say, look at the Jimmy Savile case. 40 years kept secret because it could be kept secret, but things are changing, and the secrets that were thought to be kept are now coming out, and the system is breaking down. Slowly but surely, the ordinary person in the street is becoming not so much distrustful, but open to other ideas and no longer accepting the reasons that they're given for something that comes from officialdom. So I think that I'm seeing a tremendous change in the way people accept or not the official information they're being given. And I think as the months progress, we're going to see that take on quite a big pattern.
Absolutely. We're saying the same thing. All over the place. I mean, the birth of the internet really cracked it, whereby lots and lots of information in puzzle piece format, together with a lot of disinformation, was all out there. And it's up to the people to look at each individual piece within its own merit, if you like, and then start to cross-reference each piece and build up. I call it like doing a jigsaw puzzle on a two-dimensional table. You look at each piece individually, and then start to connect them together, and slowly you build up a picture.
Yeah.
And then when you get the picture to a certain point where you can see the whole picture, then you lift it off the table and join the corners to form a sphere. And that takes it into a different dimension of understanding. And that's really where I see the consciousness kicking in, when we can do that and comprehend all these different pieces and how they fit.
Mm.
But what sort of other things? Have you got anything that you specifically wanted to bring to this radio show tonight? We do have tens of thousands of listeners plus. And it is a very good opportunity for you to give any information you might feel is relevant.
Yes, I will. I'll say to you that within the next 12 months there will be a false alien invasion. What you've got to look for is the first generation back-engineered black triangles, which are obsolete technologically now, but they've held on to them. What I think you researchers refer to as program life forms. For 3 to 4 days, the Earth will be in lockdown, so there'll be no internet. That'll just be taken off. There'll be no Facebook. All commercial flights will be cancelled. You'll have the same thing that you had in 9/11 and the Twin Towers. You'll have people phoning in, supposedly being independent people, reporting they've seen this, that, and the other. But of course, they'll all be employees of the media or government contracts. After 3 to 4 days, the Americans will say that the first alien invasion has been defeated. However, there's a second wave of aliens on the way, and the only possible way to deal with this is if the nations of the world unite and allow all their resources to be drawn into one, and therefore they wish to create a one government, a single unit government. Now, how that will pan out, well, each country will have its same government. They won't be replaced, but they will have to go up the line, up the chain of command for their decisions. The next thing that people will be told is that human-type clones have been found, and that it's impossible to tell the difference between a human and a human alien clone. Therefore, they wish to chip all humans. They wish to put a microchip into all humans, and they will then set up scanning stations so that they know who is human and who is alien. But this is a trick to get people to take that chip. The information that I've been given from, I don't call them ETs, I call them interdimensional beings or extra-dimensional beings, because they come through a portal. They've told me that the One World Government will probably last between 8 months and 12 months before it's brought down. So I suppose if there's anything that I want to say to anybody is that if this goes ahead in the next 12 months, please don't be scared. It's not real. It's a complete fabrication to get a one system government and to get everybody chipped. And I just say to you, do not take the chip. So that's the most important thing I wanted to say to you all.
Yeah, absolutely. We've looked in detail at how that's going to work and how it functions, the physics, the systems behind it. So, yeah, I completely agree with that. We've been looking at a Project Bluebeam for a long time. Carol Roslin told us about it. It was always planned with Wernher von Braun. There's many different things I can point to and say, look, see, there it was, there it was, there it was. But this is what they do. They pre-program the information into you so that when it actually happens, you think it's, you know, something else. But that's the point. We're waking up to that fact. We know we've all been lied to. And we know
what they're hiding. Tony, I got to jump in here. Listen, it ain't going to happen. That's the bottom line. Okay, we know that. And I'm so glad that Simon brought this forward, because this is exactly one of the tactics I like to use. But when we're dealing with consciousness and what consciousness can be convinced of, and based on my understanding of the Matrix, and that all the universe, never mind the world, but all the universe is the stage and what role are you playing, let's do the math on this, guys. Okay, we have aliens from another world coming to Earth. And we beat them? Are you shitting me? Okay. No, let's move on to the next B-movie plot. Anyway, so you're right, Simon. I totally agree with that. But, my feeling on it is it's not even going to get that far, because the way this game is getting exposed right now, there's not a chance they can keep up with it. I can't even imagine, you know, months from now, people buying that shite, it ain't going to happen. So, and I'm glad you brought it up, because, I mean, like Tony was saying, Werner von Braun brought that up and all that stuff forward. And that it's all consciousness planning. And sorry, I'm a star in my own role, as are you and Tony and Cindy and everyone listening. So choose the role and lose the fear. This is the thing, you know. That's the only thing that can control you is fear.
Yep. I agree with that to a point. This is the point. Just because it's been planned doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen exactly in that way. It is very, very important to be mindful of that, what is planned, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen in that particular way. If all people are conscious of it, or if a lot more people are conscious of it, then we can change it. We might make our own future by actively taking part in constructing that future for ourselves and our future generations. Could you comment on that, Simon?
I don't disagree with any of that at all. The problem that the ruling elite have is that there's been a lot of New Age rubbish spoken about 2012, but there is some very interesting science behind the changes that occurred on the 21st to the 22nd of December. And I would just say that the what's called the Hadron Collider, the CERN device, which is a, if I say time machine, I don't mean sort of H.G. Wells type of time machine, but the CERN device was built almost specifically not to search for dark matter, but to interfere with some very important changes that were occurring on the 21st and the 22nd of December. And it was very important that that device was sabotaged, that it didn't work. And some efforts were made to prevent that machine working. And I have actually been given a screen, I'll try and email it to you, a printout after the event from CERN itself, showing that on the 17th of December, there was no beam activation and the device shut down and is not due to be reactivated until next year. And the whole point of the exercise was to prevent that machine operating between the 17th of December and the 22nd of December. That now means that because that machine did not activate, it went through some cycles, but it didn't get to full power. There was a problem with it. That the portal, I refer to them as the Anu. I know everybody calls them Anunnaki, that or just call them the Anu. Their portal has been closed now. They're trapped here. As the energy increases, those members of the elite are going to find it harder and harder and harder to exist on this planet. Therefore, they're fighting amongst themselves, and they're going to be absolutely desperate. So I do expect something along the alien invasion line, because simply it's their last card. They've got nothing else to play. So it has been an incredibly draining and complex time for me these last 3 months. But I totally agree that if we believe something to happen, then we can make it happen, because consciousness can create reality.
Absolutely. We were talking about this, the effects of scalar waves, which is basically the brain's producing scalar waves, which allows for telepathic communication, etc. And we construct matter. Matter is constructed with scalar waves and scalar energy. I mean, this is how we all ended up here in the first place, creation.
I completely agree with you, Tony. I believe that we are just as powerful, if not more powerful, than HARP when we combine our efforts.
More.
And
I'll take HARP on.
Your thoughts. Yeah, me too.
I'll take HARP on all by myself. It's only a machine. Yeah. We're all gods, and that's what we're here to learn and remember, that we're all God. And we all have that power of creation, because look around you. Welcome to Oz. You created it.
That's it. We're here to experience it. I'll just give Kate, have you got any questions for Simon?
I'm really enjoying the perspective. And again, it's bringing forth a lot of stuff that we already know. that's been on the horizon for a long time. It's confirming things, and I'm just really curious as to, like, Simon, what your perspective is on your purpose and what your particular role in the, I like to call it the movie, the Universal movie, what you feel that may be. I know you're a messenger and you've been through a lot, so I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, all my experiences on a physical level, both the mantids and the reptilians, the Draconis reptilians, refer to me as the Two Worlds Sun. Well, the reptilian calls me the Two Worlds Sun, but the mantid calls me the Adam. He's always called me the Adam. And I understand that I'm one of those very rare humans that can exist in two frequencies. Their physical body can exist in two frequencies. And I understand that the genetics from me have been taken to create a large number of hybrids. And it isn't about wiping out the Earth and replacing it with hybrids. It's about when the Earth changes, the bodies of the hybrids have to be able to exist in the new Earth frequency, and those hybrids will have a range of souls. They will be human, they will be mantid, they will be reptilian, and it's a fallback position that allows for beings from the fourth dimension to get beyond the fourth dimension, because at the moment they're trapped in the fourth dimension because many of them are bad guys and their souls cannot move on. But those that are prepared to change, prepared to understand the errors that they've made and prepared to go forward, they're going to attempt to, you know, give themselves another go. So that's one aspect of it. Although the beings from the fourth dimension that I associate with have all signed up generally to a plan, the mantids that I deal with do not wholeheartedly embrace the Draconis reptilian plan, and there are several elements of that that they flatly refuse to go along with, and they have their own fallback position. The mantids that I deal with are generally benevolent, whereas the reptilians that I deal with generally are not benevolent to humankind. And I don't know why I'm being allowed to have so much information and to pass it on. You know, if you look back at the history, there's been one attempt on my life, and that was thwarted. And that was a breakaway group of Satan Cabal group that took it into their own to silence me and somebody else who was with me. And that didn't happen. And since then, I think they've been told very firmly that that's not on the agenda. So it's a very interesting world that I'm in the sense that I have no fear for my life, not because I'm not scared of dying, but because I know that they can't do anything to me. So I just talk and I just tell the truth as it is. And if that helps by making people go out and do their research and search their own souls, then I think that's a good thing. But I don't think there's a pattern to it. I'm just here and I'm just doing what I think's right.
Okay. Well, this has been a recurring thing that's been coming up time and time again recently. The more time goes on, the more people like yourselves come together with us and are giving the people some sensible, honest information. And we are finding, same as Stephen Kelly used to be working with NSA, and he developed the laser sights for guns, etc. We were on with him last night, and some incredible information. He's blown the lid on the deep underground military bases under the Getty, which is the Queen's pride and joy, her royal palaces, and many other aspects. And I'll let Kate speak, because I know she wants to mention something.
Yeah, the whole lesson that we need to learn was in The Wizard of Oz, and it's mean, we're dealing with drama tornadoes of a universal scale here. It's just a movie, guys. One hell of a movie, though, once you start to fulfill your role in it. Now, when the house came down on the Witch of the East, of course, that was symbolism trying to destroy the mystical teachings of the East. Where did Dorothy get her silver or ruby, as the movie showed, ruby slippers? They came off the Witch of the East, which was, you know, the shoes of truth. That's what silver represented when Frank L. Baum wrote the book. And once you put those shoes on, once you become the door of God, Dorotheus, once you become the door of God and you stand in those shoes of truth, even the wicked old witch of the West can't touch you. And that was proven. And it was made very clear. While she stood in truth, everything fell before her. And that is when... this is why the choice has to be made within. This is not a choice someone can make for you. You have to be the one to say, okay, I've had enough. A lot of us have been through the mill to get to this point. And I'll tell you right now, those deciding to put those shoes on are going to have a whole lot easier walk than we did, because that trail has been blazed, and where it used to be narrow, it is miles wide. And this is why I'm suggesting to people, all you need to do is stand in the truth, and nothing touches you. The script works for you instead of against you. And as you know, Tony and myself and Simon, I'm sure you've been through the mill as well. I know countless others that have, you know, for by virtue of standing in truth, of course, attracted all the bad energies. And again, that was the test to see if you could stand in the truth. And if you did, you were fine. Only the belligerents that couldn't let go of the anger and the hate and the fear and all the rest of it were taken out. And I can give you a list of people there that exposed a lot of truth. But I also do know the resonant feature of that they were still caught in the illusion of the movie. So once you step outside of that, you start to see the Matrix as it really is, and then you start controlling what you've pre-sent to yourself. We're all in the past here. Everything around you is past. We are moving forward through time because we came here backwards through time, leaving the breadcrumbs called the synchronicities or the coincidences in a row. All you have to do is start following your white rabbit, set it right in the Matrix. Neo, follow the white rabbit. And what did he do? As soon as he followed the white rabbit, he eventually found himself in the keys and the truth. And that's all we're doing. So all you got to do, people, is throw on those beautiful ruby red slippers of truth, and nothing touches you. That's called divine providence. And when you get there, you'll be fine. Nothing touches you.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's making that leap. But yeah, that's all you got to do. Just take that leap, and you'll find you'll find amazing stuff opening out in front of you.
I was going to say it's not so much a leap, Tony. Now it's just a step up the curb, guys. We've already jumped the chasm, so let's play. It's fun.
I was going to say I used the word leap because it was a leap for us. Seriously. Simon, any comments on that, sir?
No, absolutely correct. The thing is that for many people, even though they grasp the truth, they cannot let go of the physical reality because they are still a prisoner of their education system, of the media, and they just can't make that last final release. And because of that, they get trapped. I've never bought into this system. I've always just not part of this world. And it was very easy for me to just say, you know, it's not real in that sense of the word, that it's not necessarily going to happen. And you can create your own wishes. I just say that for many people, though, it is extremely real. The incident I had where I was rammed off the road, I had a person in the car who I put a message out on David Icke's website, actually, and I'd said, "Has anybody seen the reptiles?" And I got a huge amount of replies, but one really stood out, very, very clearly stood out. And I arranged for this person to come over. They weren't living in Britain. This person's father is a key Mason, was a governor of a city, a millionaire, an owner of a football club, and I arranged a three-way meeting with a researcher called Wynne Keach, and the three of us met for a couple of hours, And it was on the way back, I was driving this person back to Heathrow Airport to get them back on their plane, that our car was rammed. And it became very obvious to me that that they didn't want whatever we were discussing, they weren't happy with. And what we were discussing was that this person was had been fully under what people call MKUltra. I just refer to it as mind control. As a child, this person had been put in a cage with wild animals, had seen other children killed, and had this person had its personality split into several alters. And I spoke, I say spoke, I don't mean with my mouth. I spoke to the being, it's a Draconis reptilian that wants me to call it dad. So I've got a mantis that says I must call it mother, and a reptilian that I must call it dad, and I'm referred to as the Adam. And I said to the Draconis dad, look, I want to cure this person of this ailment. Can you transfer this person to my keeping, away from the humans who currently control this person? And I spoke to mum first, and mum said it's not my decision, and went to speak to dad, who came back and said it's agreed, this person will be transferred to your keeping, but you will have to be the master for this person, because that's the way it is. But if you can, you know, you can, we will give you the tools to, I don't like the word deprogram, but we will give you the tools to unpick, and, you know, we can do that. And it was within a week of that that the car was rammed, because a faction of humans of that particular lodge, who obviously didn't like the fact that this high-value target, this high-value person had been taken out of their control, and hence we were rammed. But it took me approximately 9 months to deprogram this person. They had to accept me as in the position of trust. What we had to do was overcome the booby traps that had been placed in this person's mind. There's a booby trap called a wolf program, which can lead to suicide, and the organs can close down. So it's a bit like a bomb disposal expert. You have to go in and know where to cut the wires. And I was given all this information, how to do this. And the alters were absorbed into the core. And so this individual now is free from them. And I've now worked with 5 people, and over a period of time have assisted them to do it. And the sad thing is that when these people go to health counselors or psychologists, they can't help them, because they don't understand how that person's personality was fractured. And they used, when they did it, they used pain and suffering, and I can't use pain and suffering to undo that, but I have to use other ways. So for instance, when I showed a bullwhip to one of these people, they just went into the fetal position, not because they had been hit with a bullwhip, but because wild animals had been controlled by a bullwhip and had been goaded to attack them when they were children. So I had to understand and work and unpick it. And I find that the most rewarding thing, to be able to help a human being who has had their mind fractured, going right back to the days of the Nazis, and putting it back. You can't put it back 100%, but you can put it back and give them a life back. And I don't want any payment for it. I don't want any thanks even for it. I just want to do it, and then they get on with their life. So to me, one of the benefits, I suppose, of interacting with these beings is the very beings that gave the knowledge to these dark humans in the first place to do all this nasty stuff, they're actually giving me the information how to unpick it. And so no wonder these cabals are absolutely pissed off with me. Excuse me, I shouldn't say language like that, but that's why they're so angry with me, because...
On this show, Simon? Knock yourself out. You've never heard Katie going off in a potty mouth rant, have you? Carry on. That's light, trust me.
Okay, so that's why they're so angry, but they can't do anything, because this is the bit that people find very difficult. I actually come under the protection of a group of beings that interact on Earth. If you think of Alex Collier, I've got so much time for Alex. The problem, I say a problem, that's not the right word. The difficulty for Alex is that the beings that he meets are, I don't know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th dimension, whatever, and they held to the view that they shouldn't be involved. They shouldn't get involved, but the beings that I interact with have always been involved and manipulated. So if anybody does anything to me, these beings don't care about the universal law. They'll just come down and kick ass. So I've been in this unique position where I can say things and do things and seemingly get away with it, whereas other people far more eminent than me, far more learned than me, far better than me, have done things and they've been taken out. And it's purely and simply because that for some reason that these beings are so intertwined with me, and it's I never really got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I think it comes back to the same thing that Kate was saying earlier. If you're operating from a position of honour and a position of integrity where you're trying to help and trying to genuinely make a difference, that creates a bit of a Neo effect where, you know, not necessarily you can dodge bullets, but the bullets won't affect you. And I think that's what they were explaining in the film.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Again, it is divine providence that once you get to that integrity stage where you will not yield from the truth, you are bulletproof because they can't even see you anymore. That's how the game works. Hey, listen, if they wanted me, they'd have come and cut me a long time ago, guys. But they can't touch me, and I know that. Yeah. Oh, well, I love you, and I'm going to try to help you. That's the game, right? We do have a caller, by the way. Would you like me to bring this caller in?
Simon, can you take some questions?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're just listening or if they're a caller wanting questions or comments, but we like to be a very open show for everyone, and I mean that in the grandest sense. I'm just hoping sometime that we'll get some off-worlders calling in, you know? So anyway, area code 218-245. Your mic is hot. Do you have any questions or comments? Hello, caller, area code 218. Hello, if you're listening to the show on the phone, you're the only one. Do you have any questions or comments? I guess not. Either that or they're really, really shy. Okay, they must just be listening. Anyway, I'll put the caller back in hold, and we'll go from there.
Cool. Yeah, okay, awesome stuff, fascinating stuff. One of the things that I wanted to touch on, Simon, if you're okay to move on with a different aspect of this now.
Yeah, of course.
Is some of your experiences whereby you've left the, shall we say, the realms of this earth and gone for a trip? Because I happen to know of some interesting journeys that you've been on and some interesting interactions off-world and on other planets that are fascinating and that tell the listener a lot about who you are and why you're here and what it is that you're trying to help with.
Okay.
So I'll leave it at that point.
When in 1971, I was about 11 and a half years old, and I had one of many interactions, but this was for me, is the most important because I made an agreement. Researchers refer to it as a soul agreement. I made an agreement with this mantis, and the mantis offered me, basically said to me, "Do you want to be like us? To have knowledge and understanding, to see the future and know the past, to have power and at that point I was so excited about learning about the past and the future that I said yes, and I interrupted him that the final word was authority, and immediately then his hand came off my shoulder, he took my hand and said, then come with me. And I know that was for 2 days because I had to sleep. You have no concept, or I have no concept of night and day there. It's all just one type of light. But my body got tired and a bed was made for me. And I remember sleeping on this metal bed in a huge, huge cavernous room with thousands and thousands of little grey men. And I remember walking along holding mummy's hand. I always hold mummy's hand as a child, always. And I remember all these little grey men on their metal beds and these flashing lights. And I looked at them and I said to Mummy, they're learning. And the being that I call Mum stopped and looks at me and says in my mind, the Adam, and they always say this, the Adam is as wise as an owl. And I thought about it afterwards. It's because I didn't say they were sleeping. I said they were learning. And now I know as older and much wiser that they were being reprogrammed for the next phase of their operation. And I was given a bed, and I remember being on the bed. And that experience for me was the most important one, because I was put through tests. I was put through tests to see how I would make decisions, and these were moral decisions. One test I was given, I was shown a big screen, and there were supposedly two races at war with each other, and this race wanted this one's planet, and I was told, you have to broker a deal, you have to broker an agreement, because if these two races fight, it will be costly, not in terms of money, but costly in terms of lives and time and energy, and you have to broker a deal. And I did that. And what appeared to have happened at the end of those 2 days was I was accepted into, I can't say their order, I don't quite know how I'd call it. Everyone else had to leave the room, and it was a big viewing screen, and the mantid, who is in charge of all mantids, is called the Great One, and he was on a throne with two Draconis reptilian bodyguards. And then we had a interaction and conversation, which is private, and that's why not even Mum was allowed to be in the room. Everyone was ushered out the room, even the reptilian bodyguard had to go. And we had a conversation, and then they were allowed to come back into the room. And although it's extremely hard for many people to accept, they have the technology with my agreement to take my soul out of my body, to place it into a mantid body, and then I then go and do stuff in a mantid body. Three sorts of mantid. The first group, the lower group, are the doctors. The next group are the pilots and the computer operators. And the third group have the purple robes and hood. And they're called Universal Master. They're the masters. They're the top group. And I go into one of those bodies. And I've been used on a number of occasions to interact with humans, what you might refer to as an abduction, where the human was suffering, where the beings couldn't understand the human emotion, and they were not connecting with the human, and an agreement had broken down. And I would go in a mantid body, take charge of whatever was happening, and make an arrangement or an agreement with the human. And I have had several of those. And I have to be extremely careful when I am with other contactees or abductees, because for some of them it is hugely emotional. For me to stand there and say, well, actually, I'm sometimes in a mantid body, and I'll go in and do that. And they can't cope with that, and they'll say to me, whose side are you on? So it's a very difficult situation. All I can say is that if I had not been in that mantid body at that time, those humans would have died. So it's a very complex, many facets to it. I've never seen myself as human. My body is human, of course it is, but what's inside me ain't. And I have no problem in understanding and connecting with alien beings. I have a very real problem in understanding and connecting with humans. So yeah, that's about where I am, I think.
Awesome. That's awesome information. It does make a lot of sense, because, I mean, you know, this experience as a human being has been one experience, but it doesn't necessarily mean that inherently we've always been human, because we couldn't have always been human. We are consciousness of all different types of beings from all different areas of the galaxies, even further possibly, because we're all consciousness. But no, that's an incredible story. And
yeah, I was going to say, I agree with the whole not being able to relate to humans too well. Yeah, and I also actually, Simon, when you mentioned about the interdimensionality of the body in terms of being the atom. I totally get the concept of being able to weather two worlds at the same time. That's not an alien concept to me, where, again, everything is frequency, everything is electricity, everything is energy, everything is consciousness. And, what a marvelous, marvelous universe we have, eh? Quite something.
Yes.
It's quite a trip down here, isn't it? Cindy, have you got any questions while you're there?
Well, yes, I was going to ask Simon what his thoughts are on, are you familiar with the new Sirius movie that's about to be released?
No, I'm not.
Or Dr. Greer? Okay.
I know. Oh, sorry, yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, I'm with you now, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that? I've only seen a few of the preview videos, and I have a lot of friends who are very, very involved in the CE5 and a lot of the areas that are related to the Sirius movie, and they are just completely excited. There's a lot of groups in my area and all over the place, actually, and I was just curious what you thought about that.
Mr. Greer is very good at raising money.
Ah.
He did raise an awful lot of money for the film. I've never met the man.
Okay.
I would like to meet him. I am concerned that some of his program has been hijacked.
Okay. And do you have any specifics?
I think he's totally sincere. I think that his project offered a fantastic vehicle for those who wish to destroy credibility to become involved. My worry is that somehow his film or his book will not reach the fulfillment that he thinks it will.
Yes, I have a lot of, I've heard this before. A lot of people are concerned that it won't. But thank you very much. Very interesting.
A couple of things I'll comment on that, if you don't mind, Cindy, Simon.
Sure.
I've actually met Stephen Bassett in person several occasions, and I found exactly the same sort of thing as you're just describing or attempting to describe. You do have people that are genuinely really meaning well, but it does appear to be a situation whereby the realms of controllability that's actually possible is way beyond what people think it's possible. In other words...
Yes.
We can be controlled when even we are sitting there going blue in the face, but this is true, blah, blah, blah. And without knowing it, they're actually being manipulated to think that that's true. Now, I'll give you a couple of examples. Number one, Stephen Greer. When Stephen was sitting on stage with Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan, there was an interaction about vaccinations. And Stephen Greer was talking about everybody should get vaccinated, blah, 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 blah. Now, anybody that's done any research knows that squalene, thimerosal, mercury, etc., and all these nasty things are in vaccines. So if you can sit there with a straight face and tell somebody to go and damage their children, I've got a problem with that.
Yeah.
Number one. And number two, as I say, I've actually, when I met Stephen Bassett, I was in a place in London, and I actually said to him, don't you get, I couldn't get it across to him that he doesn't understand the magnitude of why he won't be allowed to do what he wants to do. And he looked at me with a complete and utter blank face. He just could not comprehend the words that I was trying to explain to him. They did not compute, and it was just like the computer went into freeze mode. And that was another indication of, no, this guy's not tuned in. I've got nothing against him, but what I'm saying is that was another situation whereby it was apparent to us that he was being controlled, with or without his knowledge. And I would stress that it was without, rather than an actual choice. Over and above that, we actually gave him a treatment with the Pain Genie technology, which is the electronic biofeedback technology. And some of the blockages that we found on his anatomy were incredible, having blockages in places that we've never seen blockages before. The tension in his muscle tissue, in his shoulders and down his back and down all of his muscles were just incredible. And the power levels that we had to adjust the unit way, way up there. Most people would be jumping off and hitting you for turning the power up that high, but he couldn't feel it. So it was multiple different examples of how there's something not right. So that's my actual first-hand take on it. I hope that gives you some idea.
Sure, it certainly does. Thank you. I also heard, I heard this through a friend of mine, I heard you mention earlier, Tony, that we were, like our planet here and being here in this reality was an experiment, or I've heard it said that the powers that be, in reference to space exploration, that we are not allowed to take weapons into space?
Well, that's a complete misnomer. Is a porcupine allowed to have spines?
Okay. Thank you. it's along the same lines with there are no bad ETs or...
Yeah, again, that's another one of Stephen Greer's misnomers.
Yes.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, as above, so below. And that's my feeling. And I just wanted to hear someone else say it, so thank you.
Well, it's a bit like trying to tell a cat off for attacking a mouse.
Okay.
If you see the analogy, it just applies.
Yes, I see the analogy. That's a great one.
Right the way through the whole spectrum. But, there's lots of different things. If you cross-reference all of this information, you get a different picture, which is coming back to what I was saying earlier. Certain things make sense and certain other things don't fit the picture. So if they don't fit, there must be a reason why they don't fit. So what's the reason? Well, the reason is it's not natural law. So therefore, it can't fit.
Yeah, we need a game too, right? And that's it. We can't have... Well, here, let's put it this way. You got Man United, and they're going to play Liverpool, doesn't show up at Man United while they're on the field playing. And eventually, they're all friends and get together. Then they decide, well, Liverpool isn't here, so they just split into a couple of squads using all the extras and everything else. And then they, that's the natural law of having a game, where people that would normally be playing together end up becoming posing. And it's just, that's the ebb and flow of creation. That is the... that's the duality in order for us, the infinite consciousness, to have a game with ourself. So it makes total sense. And I love the analogy, Tony, of the cat and the mouse thing, killing a cat off for doing what it does naturally.
Tom and Jerry.
Exactly. Who's in your cartoons, look. Carry on.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say, it's like, eventually, and here's the problem with the game. Eventually, if... the cats are running running the planet, and all the mice are dead. Then the cats just start turning on themselves. So evil, by definition, will destroy itself, and good, by definition, will recreate itself in another image. So it's an infinite game. We've got a beautiful consciousness going on here, and it's just a movie. So you can decide to be an extra, or a filler, or the guy that shows up on Star Trek with a different color uniform when they go to the planet. He's dead, right? You can decide to take on a speaking role, eventually work your way up into support character, and eventually co-star, and then star in your own friggin' movie. I'm going for an Oscar for best supporting actress.
There you go.
Excellent. That's the attitude, you see. But yeah, just on that note, I'd like to just very, very briefly, and I'd love you to hear this, Simon, because I'd love your feedback on it. Okay. I see this analogy as about the human race going into the deepest, darkest crevice or cave that we could possibly imagine, forgetting who we are, why we're here, what we're here for, what it is we need to know, how we need to learn it, and all of these different things. And it's all about working your way back up from the deepest, darkest forgetfulness of who we really are and what we, you know, all of those things that are previously mentioned. And then it's coming out of this cave and finding, oh my God, there's this big wide world with all these monsters and things that are going to, you know, eat us if we don't manage to survive through this maze, through this game. And then when we've started to learn how to play the maze and play the game, then we start getting onto a bigger level, a bigger playing field, like a world stage. And then we start learning to play that world stage, and we start looking out for the dangers like pharmaceuticals, like ignorance, like, you know, joining up to go and fight in the army and stuff like this, all things that, you know, you shouldn't necessarily be doing if you're a conscious individual. And then that consciousness grows and grows and grows until it gets to a point where we finally start to remember who we are and understand the magnitude of the game. And then at that point only are we going to be allowed to take this next level, which is then take that game into the outer space. But we need to learn our first, second, and third years in school first before they're going to allow us out there to do what we really want to do, which is being space exploration. I think we're actually more than that. I think we're actually librarians of the library universe or the library Milky Way. But we need to work up to that. We can't just have that straight away. And I also must point out, I do honestly believe that there are negative species of the human race that have taken control of all the toys, all the money, and all the wealth and all the technology, and they've hidden it away from everybody until the time where the bullied child grows up so he's ready to fight back. And it's at that particular point that the bullied child, aka the human race, will rise to full consciousness and then take back those toys and then use them properly. How's that?
Very well said. I like the game analogy. It's like playing any video game. You get so many lives. You get 5 lives, and you can use up those 5 lives and start over again, and you continue that process until you finally make your way to the last round and beat the bad guy, the ultimate bad guy, and you win the game completely. But after that, you get to go all the way back to the beginning of the game and start it over on a whole new level.
Yep, you raise
your hand. I say, think about 25,920 year cycle, and you're typically talking about maybe 250 to 300 lifetimes over that span. And when you put it in those kind of terms, that's not a whole lot of game piece to be playing with to come to full consciousness. So we're doing okay. And given that we've kind of been forced to play an even faster hand over the last little bit due to all the time jumping nonsense and crap that's been messing with our game grid. Yeah, we've had to wake up rather quick, and well done, guys. Good job.
I think we're doing a great job.
Yeah, major thanks out to Simon and you know, the information that you're bringing to us, because this is what we need to know. People need to get over the fact that we've got free energy, anti-gravity, and all this other stuff, and just put it away and not even bother mentioning it anymore, because we've passed that. But, you know, we are actually in a situation where you say something like free energy and they go, oh, no, and start to wander off. But no, again, look at the sun. Nobody's paying that to shine. Get over it. Move on. We need to explore deeper aspects of ourselves and deeper aspects of reality. And I'd love to hear a comment, your thoughts on that, Simon.
I can't really add to what the other two speakers have said. All I would say is that I don't want to lose a single human. I don't want to leave a single human in the dark corridor that you have just very, very clearly brought forward. I do not want to lose a single one.
None should be left behind. We're all on the same page.
Correct.
Absolutely. That's the point. And this is the point. Let's get the information out there so people can realize it, and then we can start with a full consciousness. Yes. Let's teach as many people as much as we can so we can help them understand what's going on, and then gently they'll get over the fear, and we can help them over the ravine. And it's fine. The ravine isn't really there, but you just think it is.
A great comment here, guys. You're going to add to this. I know you will, both Tony and Simon. The purpose of the International Space Station. Thanks, Billy. Always got something good to say. The purpose of the International Space Station, a giant film projector, complete with projectors, even designed by James Cameron. Would you guys stop posting? I'm trying to read this. Jesus. By James Cameron. If people remember that story, this guy's will be used as... Oh, stop moving the... God. Okay, stop posting in the chat room, please. I'm trying to read this bloody thing. All right, stop. Right, so the purpose of the International Space Station, a giant film projector complete with projectors, even designed by James Cameron, if people remember that story, the skies will be used as just one big movie screen. Thank you.
Yeah, well said. Again, this is why the barium, strontium, cadmium, chemtrail movie screen has been put up there. They haven't gone to this expense for nothing, boys and girls. Get used to it. You're going to be seeing some interesting things flying around up there, and not all of them.
Showtime.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited for it. But anyway, the point is that not all of them are going to be real. There are going to be a lot of holograms out there that you thought were real. And if you don't think that's possible, think back to a couple of towers that were sticking up. Those were holograms. They were not physical things. And we can prove it. It's not a problem. So any comments on how this is playing out, Simon? It's getting good from our perspective. It's really getting fun.
I was chatting to somebody earlier this evening on Skype, and they were quite horrified at my comments, and my comments were that this has to happen. We have to go through this. It's perhaps a difficult thing, but humanity has to face this challenge. And I just do honestly believe in the strength of the human soul and the human ability to come through. I think it will do, but we do have to go, I think, through some level of difficulty, physical difficulty, to be able to come out stronger the other end. The problem, I think, is that the other side has got nothing to lose, and so would perhaps take risks that, you know, any rational person wouldn't even dream of considering. I honestly do think that if enough people think positively and reject, we can change. I mean, you know, it was interesting that we spoke about the jumping timelines, the train tracks, the train lines, how time and again people have manipulated this timeline to attempt to put it onto something that would produce a collision course. But again and again, those tracks have been jumped back onto a much more beneficial timeline. And it is like a movie in the sense that, you know, one minute, one way, we're going one way, the next minute we're going somewhere else. And the more people that get wise to this and can reject the false world that we've been fed, then the harder it is for the bad guys to achieve anything. So I think you've used some good analogies, and you've spoken, or everyone has spoken really strongly. Everyone on this show has a deep knowledge. I'm not a researcher. I just haven't got the emotional capacity to research, because all my time is taken up in coping with what I deal with. And I can only talk in relation to what has been communicated to me. I mean, some of the stuff is fascinating. You know, we're talking about Von Braun, and, you know, my mother, human mother, between 1971 and 79, you know, worked for the NSA via the MI5. And again, researchers don't understand, they don't get it, that they said, well, why were you all part of that conversation? So as a small boy, I would just be playing with my motor cars or my soldiers or cleaning out the goldfish tank, and then there's my mother with an agent sitting in the front room discussing all this stuff,
and nobody ever asked me to leave the room. And one of those conversations was that they didn't call it Roswell. Whenever my mother had the conversation, it was called the New Mexico Crashes. That's how they referred to it. It was never called Roswell. So the New Mexico Crashes, it was Von Braun and Albert Einstein were actually taken to one of the crashes. And I remember my mother asking questions of this guy, whose name was Paul Dunlop. That was the guy's name who handled my mother. And he would say, yeah, you know, Von Braun would give this view and Einstein would give that view. And so I can only add to conversations either what I've heard from people who should know or from interdimensional or extra-dimensional beings that, you know, I do whatever I do and then we get like 5 minutes for a question and answer session. and the topic's is freely mine, and I will just ask questions, and it can be anything. And the strange rule here is they can't lie to me. And sometimes their answers aren't clear because they don't want to give me too much, but they will always have. I haven't caught them out yet, let's put it that way. Either I'm stupid and they're very clever, or what's been explained to me is that if they lie to me, any decision I make doesn't hold. Anything that I do anything that I create or do, if it's built on a falsehood, cannot stand in the future. That's what they said to me. So that we have to give you the truth. Otherwise, if you do something based on a knowing lie, then the whole tower comes down. So it's quite handy because I can, if I'm thinking straight, I can ask them certain stuff and then I will get a reply. But it's the reptilian, the creature I call Dad, it's a very different type of relationship because he's so into ceremony, so into ritual, that I have to ask my questions in a way that are part of the ceremony and part of the ritual. And I did a conference September back in Nottingham, and I always put my drawings because I draw down everything I remember. I'm no artist, but I can, and I was sort of inducted into the reptilian army, and I was able to, you know, say, well, how many soldiers in a unit, and these are the standards they use, and you know, and I learned then I was losing people because it was at such a depth, and these people in the audience were just, it was just too mind blowing. So I've got another conference in March, I think, with Planet X Radio, and I've realised now that I can't go into that level of depth. It's not right. So I'm learning how to interact with people.
Excellent, excellent. There are a couple of points I know Kate would love to have touched on there, because we were discussing with Mark Passio and natural law. So I don't know if you want to mention those, Kate.
Oh yeah. Well, you guys have worked with me long enough, and people have listened to me long enough to know my position on natural law being the absolute law. And my whole game has been to see how the cosmic law gets played with in the physical games. There is one thing I do want to share, though, I think would be a really, really fun thing for everyone to do, is I think what we need to do is we need to start promoting the alien invasion coming soon to a planet near you, and just, you know, get Rory to make up some posters. Can't look it out all over Facebook. Coming soon, alien invasion. Keep an eye out for the brand new projector of the space station, shooting movies all across the world. And don't forget to bring popcorn. That's just saying.
Yeah.
I think I'd come in here and say what Kate's saying actually is the right way to deal with it, because you're diffusing fear from the beginning. And if these bad guys can be put on the back foot, if they're not allowed to grab the initiative, if the seeds have already been sown, then it takes away another element of their control. So I actually like that idea, Kate. I think that would work quite well.
Yeah, I call it, guess what you got for Christmas, 3 days before Christmas. Why do you like me now?
Brilliant, Kate.
Awesome.
So, I'm a bitch. Get over it.
You love it.
I do. I did say I'm going for a Best Supporting Actress, didn't I? An Oscar? How am I doing?
He's doing very well.
Yeah, it was about 3 or 4 years ago. I decided I called called the costume department and said, no, this doesn't work with this meat stick, so I need something, wardrobe. And Hollywood, baby. Listen, we're in the middle of a show of shows, guys. This is the show of shows. All the world, all the universe is a stage, and what we need to do is the best way to defeat fear is to laugh at it in the face. We've been on this roller coaster how many times now, and you're still afraid of the first fall? Oh, my goodness, get this thing going faster. And that's really, I was talking to Zoe today, and I got to tell you, now this is an individual who has been, you know, tracked, has been confronted by fourth dimensionals, men in black, constantly around her, stole her house, and you name it. And we were talking today, and you know what she was mostly upset about? Oh, I'm so bored. I'm kind of black around, you know. I've got a Masonic lodge right next door, and nobody's showing up, you know. So again, and Simon, you said it. You got to diffuse it ahead of time. And once you get people into the gaming mode instead of the, you know, buying into that nonsense bullshit fear thing, it becomes a movie. It's like, you know, are you going to go to a fireworks show and get all scared? No, you're going there to be entertained. So go out and get entertained. Let's let the elites put on the show of the universe, and we'll just at the end of it. And you know, we'll pick up the wraps from our empty popcorn boxes and what have you, and then we'll move on to the next game.
Can we cash in our tickets as well? Get our money back.
Yeah, I think that's kind of funny. Oh, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Tony. I don't know if you heard or not, but I was watching. You know how I follow my rabbit trails, right? Like religious. And so I clicked on this link last night regarding Nibiru, right? Of course, you look up Nibiru and Black's Law, and it comes up Nihil, as in annihilate kind of thing. And it's so funny. But anyway, I'm watching this video, and at 2 minutes and 40 seconds into it, you watch this asteroid. You know, it's all fear porn, right? This asteroid coming, screaming towards Earth, and guess where it hit? Right where I live. I'm thinking, Perfect. Now I know the effect that document had. That's Nibiru hit right where I am, and guess what happens from here? The ripples go out.
Yep. Well, let's just bust that fiction right now and right here, shall we? If there's any asteroids coming through anywhere, they've been directed. So let's just bust that one on the head as well.
Oh yeah, it ain't gonna happen. Again, it's all fear porn. It's all Hollywood, all magic, and. I don't know. I think we're, you know, I'm going to ask the chat room. Do you guys think we would do a better job writing the script or not? Just waiting.
No, repeat that. I lost you for a second. What?
Oh, Lad said it. Yes. Everyone in the chat room, do you think we could write a better script for this movie or not? Okay, we got two yes so far.
Three.
Yeah, there's four. Five. Yeah, we can write a better script. Yeah, so we, you know, and you know, hopefully, you know, Simon's going to leave tonight thinking, you guys are all looped. Anyway, of course we are. You're hanging out with us, you know, so it's that's your fault. No, but the truth of the matter is, people, you got to lighten up. And those that, I've just said to my friend here, those that are caught in the material game are the ones that are going to be manipulated because they can't see through the illusion. They can't see through this most beautiful matrix. Once you can see past it, and I got to tell you, there are many, many times that I'm looking at it going, like, what the hell is the point of this? And, you know, different eyes now, different time. And it all makes sense. It's actually kind of funny.
God's cool. Absolutely. God's cool.
Yeah, training ground for angels. Kindergarten for angels, I've called it for many years, so.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Simon, is there any other things that you want to mention at the moment? Because I know you've got tons and tons more that you haven't said. I'm just eager for you to speak and give us some of your information.
We've discussed about the false flag business, and that's great that we've talked about that. I mean,
I always wonder why people would be interested, because a lot of it is just personal to me. It's like, you know, they come down, they collect me. Sometimes they collect me in my physical body form. Sometimes they don't. They just take what's inside me. And I've only had one memory of being returned to my body. I tell you what would be interesting. This is something that perhaps I haven't talked about. Being taken when driving in a motor car. This person that I told you was in the car with me when we were rammed off the road. Well, 2 days before that, we'd gone to the supermarket and we bought some food and that we needed, and we were driving back from the supermarket through the town of Scarborough and the East Coast, North Yorkshire. And I remember, and we both remember driving out of Scarborough, and there's a village called Cloughton. And at the time, everything seemed fine. And the next thing I sort of remember is a lorry, not on a collision course, on the right side of the road, and flashing its headlights. And I remember just turning to my passenger and saying, he must think I've got my full beam on, my full headlights on. I'll just flash back and show him that I'm on dipped. And then sort of pulled up to the driveway, and my passenger says, "We can't be home yet." And I said, "Well, yeah, of course we are." And my passenger says, "No, there's no way we can be home." And then I said, "Well, it always seems quicker on the way back." So anyway, pulled up to where we were staying, and my passenger says, "This is totally not right. What time is it?" And I looked at the watch, and it should have been a 35-minute journey. And my watch showed that we'd been traveling for 15 minutes. And then my passenger said, "Do you believe me now?" And I said, "Well, yes." And I said, "But if you hadn't said anything, I would not have picked it up at all." Went in, and my passenger was absolutely soaked in sweat. I've never smelt a person stink like that, absolutely covered in sweat. So I said, "Right, okay, you need to go and shower." And the person came up to me, and we both looked at each other, because this person had grown in height. And I immediately looked down to see if this person had their shoes on, and they didn't, and I didn't have my shoes on, measured, and this person was nearly 3 inches taller than their stated height. And then what I did was I put a chart on the wall just with a ruler, and for the next 3 days, twice a day, just measured, and they went back down to their normal height. Now, we met up again some 3 months later, and automatically went into this mode, and there were two spikes on two occasions within 5 days. This person's height went up. But in relation to the one I'm talking about, the reason that this person was covered in sweat, the memory I had was of us both being lifted from the motor car. I have no idea why the car didn't crash. I just don't get that, and I don't really care. We were taken up into a huge, what looked like I'm going to describe it like the moon, a huge globe, but inside it were cities and big spacecraft. And in it was what I call my tower. I'm consistently taken, and I ascend a very thin metal pole, and at the top of it is a flat top, like a dais. And I stand on this dais, and then below me are thousands and thousands of, I call them my children. They are little hybrids. And then I raise my hands above my head, and they all do the same, and then they send me a wave of mental energy. And I've been up and down this pole many, many, many times. And on this occasion, this person was with me. And it's high, it's tall, this pole. And this person this person says, because there's what I call the being I call mum, and one other who's watching over this other person. And my friend says, "Well, which one of them is mummy?" Because mantids all look the same, you know. They all look absolutely identical. And the mantid says, "I am mummy to your master. Go to your master." But this female, say it's a female. This female was absolutely covered in sweat because she'd been up something like 120 feet high above, and it had terrified her. So that was the very first and only time so far that I can ever remember being taken from a motor car with somebody with me. But if she had not said to me, what happened to that village? I can't remember that village. I can't remember that village. I can't remember any of that journey once we left Scarborough. If she hadn't triggered that, I would have just gone in and I would have been none the wiser, because they take me so many times that it just doesn't mean anything to me anymore. And there are often times where they'll get me, and the only thing I'll know is I'll get a whistling in my ear, or I'll be not quite in the right position that I was, or I'll feel absolutely exhausted. And I don't always get the memories back from what's happened. So that was an interesting one because, as I say, it was the first time I've been taken with somebody in a motor car. And I'll just quickly go on that when the feline species that I interact with who say they come from Sirius, when they come and there's other people with me, they put them into what I can only describe as like a slow motion, a freeze frame. And then they will interact with me in front of other family members who just stand there with their eyes absolutely wide open. And at the end of the interaction, that person remembers nothing except they don't know what they've been doing. And they'll say to me, what's happened this last 10 minutes or last 15 minutes? And why am I standing here? And it's very difficult. I mean, I'm married. I'm in a relationship. And it's extremely difficult for her to cope with. And the way she copes with it is she just blanks it from her head. She won't face it. And she said, I daren't even think about it. So it's not so much me. Often we forget that it's the effect it has on those of us who are part of our lives who don't understand, either because they can't or they won't. And the effects that you when you interact, you have to balance your own human type physical relationships or mental relationships with those that you choose to be with or who choose to be with you. And this completely different relationship that you have with contactees and abductees, and again this totally different relationship with beings from another dimension, and each being is totally different, and you juggle that all the time. It's like, okay, I'm with this being, I need to be, if it's with a reptilian, I need to be in this mode, and I must be very guarded in what I say, and I must be very concise. Then I'll be with this type of being. This being's got a bit of humanity to it. It's a bit more understanding. I can be more flexible. I can't joke with it, but I can be more flexible because it understands humans. And then, you know, people who don't understand, and why should they, that side of it, they just don't even think about the difficulties that I face and that many, many others face in just getting along on this planet. Phew, I'm going to have another drink of water.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't had anywhere near the experiences you've had, but that's one of the things that, intriguingly, I've always been able to do, which is interact with lots of different kinds of people. There's no definition as so. It's just one of those talents, I suppose, or skills. But no, it's interesting you mention that. It's an amazing variety as well that you're looking at compared to what, you know, I've experienced.
But the thing is that sometimes what annoys me is I feel that I'm in a zoo, because I had one interaction with what researchers refer to as a tall grey. I probably put his height at about 7 foot. With beautiful blue eyes, but I know those blue eyes were designed to try and calm me down. And this was an interesting interaction because he stood in front of me, but he projected into my mind and a scenario played out, which we weren't actually doing, but was in my mind. And he created a derelict house. If you can imagine an old grand house where they would have a ballroom and a staircase at one end and a staircase at the other, and he starts to walk up the staircase. Now, I have the choice to stay where I am and end the interaction, or I can go up the staircase. So I go up the staircase, and then there's a gantry, like a promenade, and I decide that I want to get to the middle part, because to me that's the most important. I get to the middle part before him. I don't run, I just move faster. So I take up my position in the very center of this colonnade, this sort of walkway, gantry, and then he comes up to me, and the first thing I say to him is this real, or is this a construct in my mind? And he says to me, this is not real, this is in your mind. And I said, well, why have you done this? And he says, to give you a framework within which to interact with me, and to leave if you want. So we have a discussion, and he appears, he just wanted to come and communicate with me, and I'm not used to that. I'm used to beings coming and we do things, I mean, interesting, exciting things, we have a job to do. But he just wanted to meet me. And when you're in their presence, they do go into your mind and they do some tweaking to it. I'm very calm with them, but they still need to just be careful. This being had no concept of working with somebody like myself. It was clear that this tall grey had only ever been with screamers, because it was harshly into my mind and he was like taking my mind away. Because he was terrified of me screaming or attacking him. And I actually turned my back on him and said, well, if all you come here is to look at me, well, you can go. And he says to me, are you dismissing me? And I said, if you like, I know it sounds odd, but I said, I still love you, because he was a good creature, he wasn't a bad creature. I said, I still love you, but you can go. And then he says, very well. And I said, but return my mind to me. And he says, of course. And the next thing I know, I'm just back in my front room. So there are different types of interactions where they physically take you, where they take what's inside you, or where they physically come in front of you but start to play things out in your head. And I had one with Mum where I was floating above what looked like a Tibetan pyramid, Tibetan houses, mountains, and I said, this isn't real, and why are you doing this? And he said, to give you peace, to give you time to think, to take you away from humans, to see the beautiful sky and the colors. And I said to him, I don't want non-real interaction, I don't want that anymore. I want, if it's going to happen, it's got to be real. And then bang, there I am back in the room with him. And then I said, well, can't we do something that's real? He said, yes, come with me. So, it you know, when I talk to people, they just can't get their head around this, because they're so used to the concept of the flying saucer landed, the little grey man came out, took me and put me on an operating table, prodded me about, didn't talk to me, and put me back in my bed. And so many researchers are still at that level. So when I'm talking about, well, yeah, I hung out with this guy and we talked this and we talked that, it just, either they can't accept it or they don't want to go there, because researchers have said to me, I'll lose my credibility if I'm seen to be talking to you, because it's too deep for me. And it's fascinating how this industry, for want of a better word, is dividing itself out into those who are prepared to break new ground and look at the possibility of something, and those that are still stuck in the 1970s and 1980s, that type of abduction. My daughter also is visited by beings. She's married and she lives in London, and she went to get some help from a UFO researcher who said to her, oh, that doesn't fit the normal pattern, I'm not interested. And it just shows you how people who put themselves out, some people as researchers, are just as much trapped in their own prison as the people they think they're helping. So yeah. I find it interesting but also sad.
Yeah, totally. This is the point, though. We need people to start getting outside of their own comprehension. You know, again, same analogy. I used to think free energy was not real until I started to look, and until I started to pay attention and make an attempt to educate myself as to what was real and what wasn't. And then the walls came down, basically, because we find we're living within a construct of what we prepared to believe. And that is a construct, and that is the, you know, the box built for your mind. So we need to start bringing those walls down and throw the boundaries of possibility open.
Yeah.
To truly see what's there.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So anyway, that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do. It's all about the pieces of the puzzle, fit the puzzle together, and then we'll take it to the next and the next and the next levels.
Hmm.
Awesome stuff. So, okay, you're putting together a book, Peter, shortly. We're going to chat to you off air about that in a bit more detail. But I don't know if you...
Simon, you mean?
Simon.
I don't mind being called Peter. That's the name that comes out in the Bible. I'll answer to that.
you get a lot of people through here all the time.
Sorry, I was looking at Skype and there's a Peter up there. For some reason, it interjected into my mind and I missed it. The point being, you're putting together a book shortly. That should be available soon. We'll have a chat about that off air. But is there any websites or any information you want to get out there? Because we've got like about 5 minutes to go.
No, do you know what? I mean, everybody says to me, what's your website and what's this and what's that? And, you know, I haven't got it. And it sounds incredible. But look, let me try and explain. When I'm in their world, you don't have to actually do much. You just think it and it occurs. If I'm in their world, I can bring up any image on any viewing screen. The computers that control everything in those rooms interact with you, and you can have a conversation with a machine and it will do for you what you want. I've seen doctors operating on humans. You could call them abducted humans. They didn't look abducted to me. They looked like they were quite happy. And never mind science fiction, Star Trek. I've seen alien doctors call up computer panels that float in the air. You can transparent like glass, and they just float, hover in the air, and they'll just touch them with their fingers and their minds, and they will interact and stuff will happen. And I've been around this lot so long that when I have to press buttons and on Earth, I find it so difficult. For instance, when I vacuum the house, I'm quite good. I do the vacuuming in this house. I've got to take a plug out of this machine. I've got to put it into a socket in the wall, and I've got to press a button, and then I've got to physically push this machine over the floor to clean it. And I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. So unfortunately, when I was young, about 5 or 6 years old, I interacted with what people call a shadow being. And that we haven't even talked about the shadow beings, which I've had quite an extensive interaction with. And after that interaction, I got what people call dyslexia. So I'm very bad with dyslexia in terms of writing, although my spoken word is just gone completely the other way, and I'm quite good at that. So I don't have a website. I really need somebody to help me with a website. So no, I don't have anything like that, is the answer.
Oh, we'll hook you up, Simon. Don't worry about that. We'll get you hooked up with people that don't mind pushing buttons. We got like 2 minutes left here. So before we finish off, I just want to say thanks to everyone for listening to a super version of Outside the Box with Tony at the helm. Of course, on Freedom Reigns Radio, freedomreigns.us. Please stop by anytime. And, of course, we're here on Blog Talk Radio. And we'll definitely get you back, Simon, because, you know, we do impromptu shows and stuff. And, lots of fun. And we'll get you hooked up with someone that can push buttons for you. We have a few sites available.
Okay, that's very kind of you.
And quite a range of contacts as well, republishing and all that sort of thing. And I would just suggest to anybody that's listening, Miles Johnson has got a site out there where Simon's done lots of interviews with Miles. And that site is on YouTube, and it's Megawatts1066. So if anybody wants to go and do some more research on Simon Parks and the interviews, the information, they can find some there, can't they, Simon?
Yes, they can. Yes, indeed.
Excellent. Like I say, there's a lot of information out there. It's down to people to go and start, you know, taking it upon themselves to dig deep and go and take a look at some things that they might not otherwise have looked at.
Well, listen, guys, it's been lovely to chat with you. I hope it's been of help or interest, and we must do it again someday.
Oh, yes, very soon.
Yes, yes. It has been a pleasure sharing the air with you. Completely fascinating stuff you shared tonight.
Thank you.
And we'll touch base off air, Simon, because we've got a feeling we've got a lot of different areas that we need to touch base with, so that's going to be fun.
All right, my friends. I'll be saying goodbye now.
Okay.
Much love and safe travels.
Yes.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Okay, I guess that's it for the night, guys. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Much love to everybody, and Tony, great job. Cindy and Simon, awesome, awesome. Love you all.
Love you too, Kate.
Cheers,
all right.
Yeah, we're off the air, guys. So, yeah, we'll catch up after the show here.
Wonderful.
All right.
Okay.
Cool.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.